We're here in Pittsfield, SpartanUpPodcast.com.
Welcome to Pittsfield, Vermont. We're here in the very cold barn. That's why I have
beautiful
my jacket on.
Beautiful barn, though.
Absolutely gorgeous barn. Sefer lit a fire for us. I'll start with Sefer, actually. Sefer, you're our rewilding expert, which made
thank you, Johnny.
Fitting that you built the fire to help us survive here in the wilderness of this barn.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Awesome.
Not much of a wilderness, but okay.
It's not. Joe DeSena, of course, needs no introduction, the founder of Spartan Race. Thanks for having us here.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah, and a real honor to introduce Colonel Tim Nye.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome. And I am not Dr. Johnny Waite, although I'm very flattered that Joe always introduces me a doctor. I think a
doctor fixes things, right?
Yeah. And
with a holistic approach, you fix things.
Yeah.
You really understand psychology. As far as we're concerned, you're a doctor.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Cool. Remember that, Sefer. You introduced me as Mr. Johnny Waite a while ago, and after the vaunting of my ego from Joe, it really hurt, actually. So, yeah.
Apologies.
So, no, absolutely. So, but hey, we're not here to talk about us as much as that's what we're doing at this moment. We're here to talk about
Angela Duckworth.
Associate Professor Angela Duckworth.
University of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, who, as you said, is the world's preeminent expert on?
Correct. Yeah, so Tim and I actually drove down there, I'm not sure when, and you'll love this. She allowed the interview, but she told me to wait at her office. Well, after waiting 40 hours, she shows up, and I think it was a test of grit or perseverance. I don't know what she was trying to do here, but I wasn't leaving.
Yeah.
And we got the interview. We sat with her for a few hours. We took out all the great nuggets, and we'll have an opportunity to learn what grit really means. And anybody watching, I think, will be able to find out if they can flip that switch and become a little tougher, gain a little more perseverance and gain some grit.
So we are here at the University of Pennsylvania's Department of Psychology in Philadelphia with the preeminent expert, although she may not call herself that, we do, on grit. You've studied grit for how many years?
Oh, gosh. I think this is now more than a decade.
Wow, over 10 years. And what got you into it? How did you...
Well, it's if you really want to know the story, I was sitting around with my advisor at the time, Marty Seligman, very famous psychologist, well-known for lots of things. And we asked a simple question of each other, you know, so what are the ingredients of success that would define not just being, you know, pretty good, not just being very good, but what sets apart the real outliers in achievement from the rest of us, right? Like the people who are far and away better than anyone. And so we set ourselves on that project, and actually that conversation led to more conversations. In fact, we just interviewed people, mostly I was doing the interviewing, of truly outstanding individuals in their fields. And we asked this question of them, and we asked them to tell us about the people they most respected in their field. So not necessarily to describe themselves, but describe the people that they thought were far and away better than everyone else. And, you know, consistently you would get this theme of, you know, people who just are incredibly doggedly tenacious about the singular goal. And also, it's not just the effort. It's not just sort of like, well, they pick themselves up after they fall down, and, you know, they don't take no for an answer. So it wasn't just that, although that was a big part of it. There was also this idea that those people were just obsessed with a certain thing, that they thought about this thing all the time, and that also they maintained over time. So not just effort over time, but interest, focused interest over time. And that's what we call grit.
And then once you came to that conclusion, you said, we're going to start studying this for the next 11 years of my life.
I think once I thought really there's a hypothesis, right? A hypothesis. What sets apart the true outliers is this kind of, endurance, this incredible and unusual stamina in both dimensions of interest and effort. Then I decided to study it. I actually don't think I'll ever be done studying it because, you know, this is a hard problem. And like the people who are obsessive about other things, you know, crossing the British Channel or whatever.
You are obsessed.
That's my thing, right? Yeah. So.
And looking back, are you happy you stumbled upon this? Because this is, for me, it's probably the most interesting thing in my life as well, grit.
Yeah, I am absolutely 100% happy that I started down this path. I don't feel like I've gotten very far, right? Maybe everybody feels this way about the thing that they do. So I feel like I am just at the beginning of trying to, you know, crack this one. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, what could be more interesting?
And then are you really excited about this maybe not being innate, but being something that people can develop?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think one of the, you know, important insights from from psychology, from science in the last 20 or 30 years is that everything, really, almost everything, possibly everything, that we think about, you know, people being extroverted or being not extroverted or being, you know, really talkative or not talkative, or these things are all both genetically determined. So there is something about, you know, having genes from, you know, your particular mom and dad, right?
Sure,
and
sure.
And I totally acknowledge that. There hasn't been a twin study on grit, but if it's like anything else, it's partly genetic. But the part that interests me more is that which is not genetic, right? Because exactly.
Can we develop it?
Can we develop it? Can we think about it? Can you know, books and movies and conversations and role models and, you know, all those things, can those affect it? And if grit is like any other human characteristic that psychology has studied, then that's also true, that it's also environmentally determined. Okay.
So just to nail a definition, it's the ability to stay not just physically on task, but mentally on task, even when things look worse.
Yeah,
like,
so
like you see no light at the end of the tunnel, and you're still excited about it.
So I would say that grit is sustaining passion and perseverance toward a singular long-term goal over years and years.
Baking muffins.
It could be whatever it is. It has to be challenging enough that, you know, you don't kind of like get there in, you know, a day, a week, or even a year.
Right.
So if baking muffins, if you want to like keep getting
best,
to be like better and better and better, right. You know, roasting a chicken better. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
But oftentimes it's things that are different than that. I think the reason I was hesitating, because you had said, even when you don't see that there's any hope, I think this is the thing. From the outside, right, really gritty people look like they're doing things against all hope, right? Like doing things even though they've lost hope. But I think from the inside of a gritty person, like that's what makes them gritty, is that they don't lose the hope.
Right. No, that makes sense. I'm listening to you and I'm excited because I think I have some of those characteristics. So
yeah.
So I'm feeling good.
I'm guessing you do, yeah.
So let's go off track kind of on the cookie test, one of my favorite tests ever, right? Or marshmallow test.
Yeah.
And so I watched your TED talk, and I would say that's a giant part of grit, the ability to abstain from instant gratification, but I don't know if you agree with that.
So I think that that grit and self-control are related. Just to give you know a sense of what the delayed gratification task is, the famous marshmallow test. Four-year-olds sit in front of a plate of a treat that they have previously identified as their very favorite treat, right? So there's a big pile and a little pile, and the choice is this. If you can wait until I come back into the room, then you can have this larger pile, or you can have this little pile right away.
Right.
And, you know, almost universally, kids choose the bigger pile. I'm like, oh, yeah, I can wait, right? And so many people do this. Like, oh, yeah, I definitely want to lose weight. I'm definitely going to go to the gym on Monday.
And then they fold.
The question is, can they do it, right? Do they fall apart? Do they not fall apart? Are they able to sustain what they've declared they really want to do? So invariably, you know, kids say, oh, I'll take the larger pile and I'll wait. That's, you know, no problem. But then, of course, you know, many of them fall apart. They, you know, they actually eat the first treat that's there, you know, within seconds. Some of them last a little longer than that. And, of course, you know, there's a whole distribution. So the ability to resist temptations in the moment, to say, you know what, I'm going to do something that's harder, less pleasant in the moment than this other thing. Facebook, right, Instagram, Doritos,
wake up early in the morning, not hit the snooze button.
Not hitting the snooze button. These are all, I think, you know, exercising self-control. And I do think that that's really related to grit. But I think here's the crucial difference. And somebody said it far before I did. So Francis Galton, who was not a perfect human being, but he was a great scientist, and he was the first scientist to study high achievement. He said in 1869, when he wrote on this topic, and he actually studied outliers in very different dimensions, like law and sports and so forth, he said, you know, it's a common misunderstanding that people think that the really great individuals have this prodigious self-control, right? The ability to deny themselves and to, what he said, overcome the hourly temptations, right? But that is not true of the most eminent individuals in society. What's true of the most eminent individuals in society is that they have zest and the capacity for sustained hard labor. So I think of grit as, you know, this capacity for sustaining passion and hard labor over really long stretches of time, decades, you know, in the case of grown-ups. And that's obviously related to being able to resist a marshmallow or a treat or the snooze button for a few minutes. And they're very correlated, so people who are more self-controlled tend to be gritty.
Sure.
But I don't think they're exactly the same thing. I think when somebody, you know, sticks it out through special forces training or, you know, keeps a company afloat for years while people are thinking he should have just quit his job and gone back to some corporate, you know, position, I don't think it's exactly the same thing. I think, you know,
where's the threshold? I challenged my 6-year-old when I really started to study the test, and it was 10 o'clock at night, past his bedtime. So I was afraid the test was going to be flawed against me, and I gave him ice cream, which I never give him. So it was definitely against me, and I said, Jack, you can eat the ice cream now. Take it, put it in front of him, or wait. And I didn't give him a set time, and you'll get 2 scoops. And 3.5 minutes in, he turned to me and said, Dad, how long do I have to wait for 15 scoops? And that's the greatest answer ever, right?
Right.
But what's the threshold? Is it? And the reason I asked the question is not just from that example, but I've been an entrepreneur since I'm 13. I've hired 1,000 people to work for me. And most of those people are a year in or 8 months in or 2 years in. And it's like, all right, I need a better position. I need more money. And I remember my first business was 9 years before I made any money. So that's how I, so is it 9 years? Is it 15 minutes? What?
Yeah, I mean, if you're asking the question, like, how long are you supposed to work at something before you quit? And you say, like, okay, time to fold, right? I mean, obviously that has no singular answer. Yeah. And, you know, it's got to be not only different for different fields, but it's got to be different for every situation. And here's the thing, like, you don't really ever know, right? Because you're, you know, trying to look into the future. If you knew that the second marshmallow is going to come right now, or like if I waited one more second, then obviously the answer would be just wait one more second. And so I don't think you ever know. But here's what I think makes gritty people so great, right? It's not that everything always works out for them, right? And it's not always that, you know, the gritty people are going to be successful, because you can imagine somebody who has tremendous grit but really poor judgment,
sure,
and just goes down the wrong path,
wrong road,
right?
Yeah.
For like 10 or 20 years. So it's not, you know, a cure-all. It's not a miracle. But I do think this is the great thing about gritty people. I think they really are able to deal with what's just inevitably true in life, which is that there are many, many, many situations in life where the payoffs are simply not going to happen in the first year, 3 years, 5 years. There are many situations in life where you're going to, like, take one step forward and three steps back. And there are many situations in life where the progress isn't going to be visible, right? You know, you're working away on, like, your umpteenth, you know, try at a filament for the light bulb, and like it fails again. And even though there's some kind of progress because you've learned from your mistakes, it's not visible progress. So I think what makes gritty people great, I think, is that they're able to, you know,
push,
keep going
aside,
despite that, right? So, but it's a kind of hyper-rationality as opposed to an irrationality. I think they see things maybe more clearly, and they see that, you know, that can happen, and that, you know, there will be rewards later on, as opposed to irrationality. I mean, I don't think gritty people are crazy.
Everybody seems to think I'm crazy.
Do you think you're crazy?
I hope you're not sitting still while you listen. If you are, you better get a burpee break in.
Hey, guys. My producer says we need a lot of reviews on iTunes so that Apple will make it easy for you to find our show. Can you help us out by subscribing and writing a review? We'd really appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Everybody seems to think I'm crazy.
Do you think you're crazy?
I think I'm normal and everybody else is crazy.
Yeah, exactly. It depends on whether you're looking from the outside in or the inside out. Yeah.
So, one of the questions I had is I read a book, and I'm trying to think of the author, but it was on ADD. Mm-hmm. And it's called The Edison Gene is the name of the book.
Yeah, no.
And the reason there might be some relevance here is if you gave me bad news just now, I'm not going to get my second cookie or ice cream, whatever the news is. Literally within 45 seconds, I say to myself, what was I just upset about? And I'm on to something else. Now, when I say something else, I didn't make a complete right turn, and I'm still focused on the goal, but just on the positive thing. And I've forgotten about the negative.
Right.
And when I read the book to try to understand ADD, assuming he's right, he argues that we've got remnant genes of being hunter-gatherers. And as hunter-gatherers, and I try to explain this to my wife, if we were in a cave, I wouldn't say, gee, your hair looks nice, or your things that women want to hear, right? Yeah. I'd say, look out, there's a killer spider behind you, or quick, let's chase that deer and go get food. And so you're constantly monitoring your environment until something there is to hone in on, you hone in and get so focused you drive people crazy. So my question is that maybe what's going on here?
You know, I am not an evolutionary psychologist by training. It's not that I don't believe in evolution, totally believe in evolution, but it's just, it's not my training. And I will say that particular story of sort of like, okay, in a hunter-gatherer society, we always had to be like scanning the horizon and looking for threat and risk. It's hard for me to make a connection to grit. But I will say this. I mean, if you want to ask me, you know, what do we know about what gritty people are like? You know, aside from the fact that they pursue things with passion and perseverance over the long term, like, well, why is it that some people do that and some people don't? I do think something that you said really resonates with me. So we find that gritty people have a cognitive mindset to focus in on things that they can change and less of a bias to sort of, like, think about all the many things, and of course there are many things that they have no control over, right? So, for example, growth mindset, the ability or actually the belief that your ability is changeable, right? Not that your ability is changeable, but the belief that you can change in how well, for example, you learn something. This is an idea that Carol Dweck at Stanford has gotten very popular for good reason. We find that kids, for example, who have more of a growth mindset are more likely to be gritty. And then that grit predicts their performance in school, their college enrollment, and their college persistence. So this, you know, disposition to think about, well, what can change here? And I think that's, I heard that in the story you told me.
Yeah.
The other thing we find about gritty people, and I think it's a very similar finding, in clinical psychology, you know, it's been a really long path, but I think we now know a lot about depression and anxiety. And one of the features of the cognitive mindsets of people who tend to get depressed and anxious is that they tend to catastrophize. And when things go wrong, they immediately focus on, you know, what they can't change about the situation, and they kind of blow it out of proportion. And gritty people are just the opposite. So like mindset, we also find that a kind of optimism, a sort of, you know, a focus on, you know, this thing went wrong, and here's a cause of what happened. Like, here's a reason why something went wrong. What about that can I fix or change? Like, that tends to be what
gritty
people are.
And get quickly on the positive.
Yeah, it's not to say that, you know, gritty people ignore problems, because they absolutely don't ignore problems. But, you know, if there's 90% of the things that they can't change and 10% that they can change, I think their inclination would be like, well, let's
focus on
let's talk about the 10%.
So the biggest thing I think I would want to ask, and all the Spartans would want to ask, is how do they become gritty if they're not?
Yeah, so
that's probably the big question you get every day.
Yeah, how do you get grittier, right? Yeah, I wake up every day with that question. So, you know, the first thing to say is I don't know, right? I don't have a satisfying answer. The things that I mentioned before, you know, growth mindset or being optimistic, actually, interestingly, you can teach that. You might think, oh, well, I either have a growth mindset or I don't. But no, you can actually convince other people to have more of a growth mindset. You can, for example, show them scientific evidence that people actually do change, right? You might have this belief that human nature is totally fixed at a certain age. There's almost no trait that's been studied in psychology that doesn't change across the whole life course. People learn things their whole lives. You might be married to someone and say, oh, well, you know, you're kind of a cranky ass, and think, well, like, I'll never change you. And oftentimes we say things like that. But it's not true. People's personalities and their abilities change throughout their whole life course. So you can change people's growth mindset and optimism by kind of proving to them that that's the more accurate view of human nature. That's one thing. Second thing that we're trying is we're just telling kids about grit and achievement. And we're trying to disabuse kids. And I say kids because we're working with middle school students. I think there's a myth. You look, you know, you watch the Olympics, you watch the World Cup soccer, you know, you read about Einstein, and all you see is the finish line. All you see is the product of thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of incredibly frustrating, effortful, tedious practice that nobody wants
stuff.
The fun stuff, right? Which now some people would find it fun, but most people don't. So we want to disabuse kids of the myth that, you know, getting to that finish line and having it look so graceful and effortless is something that you're born with and just sort of like it happens. I mean, there's not a single example, I think, of any human achievement that didn't have, you know, thousands of hours of effort behind it.
And
if they knew that, right, it wouldn't make the effort easy, but it might make it, you know, more acceptable.
So quick thought on this. We think with Spartan Race, and obviously there are other ways as well, that we help, and this is why I think we help. We think we build obstacle immunity. Like, the obstacles in the race are actually metaphors for life, because there are going to be setbacks, right? Yeah. You get to the rope climb. Oh my God, how am I going to climb 20 feet?
Yeah.
I've never even climbed a rope before. And what it does, what we found, is then people go home and things that happened to them that were going to happen anyway, they're negative. It's like, oh, it's not so bad. I'm not climbing the rope. It's not so bad. I'm not dealing with the 8-foot wall.
Or I've shown myself that I can do this thing.
I can do those things. And you get through them, and you finally get to the finish line. It feels really good. It probably releases endorphins at the finish line.
Right.
And then there's this theory on future memory, where once your brain gets the release of those endorphins at the finish line, when you get back to the starting line the next time, you get a little taste of that, because you know what it's going to feel like at the finish line.
So, you know, obviously I haven't studied you guys yet,
right.
but I will say this. Like, there are two things that are really exciting to me about, you know, the endeavor like that. One is, so if if it's true that gritty people are not insane, they're just, when everyone thinks, oh gosh, they're working against all hope, no, that person actually has hope, then I think experiences that show you that there's hope, right? Experiences that show you that things that look really difficult are not impossible, could generalize, and it's not just that it happens in this race, but you experience the
all
same thing,
life.
And, right, your relationship, your work, or whatever. So I do think people, human beings can learn from one experience to generalize to other ones. It doesn't always happen, but we're capable of that. And then the second thing is, I do think there's a really big thing to say here about culture, right? So if you want to develop grit in a child, right, it just seems to be common sense to, surround that child with other kids who are doing hard things, and they see the other kid get up when, it's been really hard. And I'm guessing that is similarly, that you create a culture of grit.
Yes,
and that
we have a family. That's right. Everybody sees, you see an overweight woman climbing the rope somehow, and so you say, well, I got to do it.
Right. You're like, oh, that's possible.
That's possible.
Right?
I'm going to get this done. A guy missing two legs and an arm. He's got one arm and he's doing the race. How could I complain? I got to do it.
Right. And I sort of have to do it in a way, right? Because I'm now part of this thing, and that's what we do.
That's what we do. We're going to fight through.
Yeah,
we're not going to complain.
Are. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff. 1 minute left. Children. We talked about it. My children, some would say I'm a little aggressive. They work out 2 hours a day.
How old are they?
6 and 8. Well, I have 4, but the 6 and 8-year-old boy are doing a lot of wrestling because I think wrestling builds grit. And I think Colonel Nye here would agree. And then I go to a wrestling camp. I just came back from an Ohio wrestling camp that he sent me to. And those kids are training 4 hours a day. And then I'm with Richard Branson, and he says his mother used to drop him off, and he had a one-time bike 100 miles to get home.
Right.
Maybe she was aggressive, but maybe those things, doing them with children.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I will not give, direct. I have an 11 and 12-year-old, by the way, so, I'm sort of speaking to you as a scientist who studies grit and then also as a parent. So I'm not going to give, generic, universal parenting advice to everyone, but I will say this. I think kids are capable of a lot more than we think they are, right?
Yeah.
And I am not afraid of my kids, working hard on things. I am not afraid of them, failing things and screwing up. And I'm actually not afraid of telling them when I'm disappointed, right? So I don't think we always have to sort of make sure that our kids are completely comfortable and,
always
without any distress, whatever. So I will say this. I mean, I think that in our culture, we've gotten to the place where, I took my daughter, she was running track and she got a ribbon for 8th place. She comes back to me and I said, Lucy, weren't there only 8 kids in the race? And she's like, yeah, this is ridiculous. And I don't think we need to give kids 8th place ribbons when they...
I love that.
It's okay to say, you know what? I came in last place. What can I do this week to, see if next week's race, maybe I'll come in 7th place.
Love
I don't
it.
Think kids are made out of glass.
No 8th place ribbons.
Okay, fine.
That's going to be the takeaway.
All right, well, hey, another great interview. Dr. Duckworth... we didn't talk about it in that interview, but the Army Special Operations, I believe, has also hired her, and she kind of put together a program so that they could kind of pre-screen their candidates for a lot of their special operations stuff. But what I really took from her talk was the whole passion, and about having a passion for what you're doing and then having to sustain it over a long time. It's easy to get involved with something and say, oh, I like this because it's the first time, it's new, it's unique, it's whatever, and to go out and get involved. But to do it over time and sustain it, and then sustain it at a high level, that's what kind of sets you apart, and that's where the grittiness really comes into play. I mean, as others drop off around you and you continue to climb the mountain, if you will, that's when you've kind of sustained that level of grittiness.
Well, I got a few thoughts there. One is, when I was on Wall Street, I bucket my life into a few buckets. And one of the buckets was Wall Street for a decade. And I watched guys that came out of good colleges, bad colleges, were on desks as assistants or big guys and girls. And invariably, a couple of girls.
Bless them.
Not quite rewilding experts. And invariably, most of the big monetary successes, tens of millions of dollars, didn't come from the right school, the knowledge, the all the things you'd think it came from. What it came from was just toughing it out, just being there, not getting fired, not quitting, right? Because around them, 6 people got fired and quit. And then the boss is looking for somebody that day to take over a book or a position or whatever. I don't know if in the military, I would imagine.
No, I mean, you know, the saying, you know, 80% is showing up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to show up. You got to show up.
And day,
you gotta,
after day,
day after
right?
day. And sooner or later, you look around and you
can't. There's nobody else there.
Nobody there but you.
Right.
You know, I mean, you call me Colonel for 32 years, but, you know, there are a lot of guys standing next to me that left before I did. So,
sure.
You know. So I may have gotten it only because.
Yeah, so I wonder, when Angela talks about that, I wonder, yes, you need to enjoy it, right? You got to have a passion for it. You got to do it for sustained periods of time. But is it as simple as just showing up?
I don't think so. I don't think. I mean, what do you think, Colonel?
If you're going to show up every day, you have to show up every day. So if you're that guy that does it day after day after day, then you are the gritty guy because you would have quit otherwise.
Yeah.
And so I think you have to.
And inherently,
I think it's a part of it.
Inherently, it's how you show up too.
Yeah.
Because
if
you're going to be there anyway,
right.
You're probably not going to be able to be there day after day if you have a crappy attitude.
Yeah.
And so that was something I really took from it. Was we think of grit as just, you know, buckling down and grinding through the awful stuff, and yet, you know, she talked about sustaining optimism and maintaining a positive attitude even as things get hard and dealing with the things that you can control. And you know, the guy who complains about all the things that happened that day at work with everyone else and quits because somebody else did something. Yeah. Where she talks about what's the one thing you can control. And so I think that, yes, it is about showing up 100%, but it's who you're being while you're showing up that allows you to keep showing up.
So I was in an airport yesterday, and I stopped at a deli to get my son. My two boys wanted some food, right? And the person behind the counter was awful. I mean, awful. But that's 90% of the people we interact with, yep. I think, when you go into stores and airports or whatever. And then I thought back to the neighborhood I'm from. If I would have walked in the deli I know there, no matter who walked in, they have a positive attitude. They're jumping to serve you. And they show up every day.
Right.
Right? And they've got a great attitude. And they're killing it. Mm-hmm. They're doing great. And it's not that hard to be gritty. Is that hard? Yeah, maybe you're playing the violin, and that's brutal on year 7.
But it's funny, it's not that hard for you because you've created an environment around you that supports that. You grew up in an environment that drove it, but there were guys who grew up in your neighborhood who aren't doing that too, right? So what we take for granted now as it's just the way of being, it's like, you know, Tim says, you know, 32 years, you learn some things and you have a way of being. Mm-hmm. So it is human nature now. But I think a lot of people grow up without those lessons, without those examples, without those mentors. And so they just don't know another way of being. So, you know, the more that she can study this and train other people like us on how to translate that to the masses, I think it's really important. And that was one of the big questions was, can it be taught, right? What did you think about that?
I think it could be taught, and I want to talk about that, but I want to ask Sephra. Mm-hmm. You've been, when we plucked you out of Greenwich, Connecticut, I don't know, what was it, 18 months
Greens
ago?
Greens Farms, no offense, Greenwich.
and we dropped you in the woods. You've been in the woods now 18 months straight.
Yeah,
and you look like you're using like makeup and a bathroom and everything. And
she knew she'd be on film today too.
It's all natural, actually. I crush up rocks and use horse hair brushes.
So I mean, there are days you want to get out of the woods, but you don't. No.
No. No.
Because you're passionate about it.
Yeah, passionate about it, and because if you know how to utilize your surroundings and like you're familiar with your landscape, then everything that you need is provided for you there, and it's a matter of like being resourceful, being resilient, and just utilizing the resources around you. And so, like if you're familiar with your trees and your plants and your edibles, and you can make a nice shelter, then I consider it a lot more luxurious than being around bright lights and a.
So you just make the best of the situation.
Always make the best of the situation you have, yeah.
So sure. Back to Can It Be Taught. A friend of mine sent me our buddy Jay Jackson, the ultimate gritty guy, who, for those of you listening, at some point I will interview. You don't know. I'm not even gonna leak the secret. You don't know anything about him. His name's Jay Jackson. Stay tuned. He sent me an email yesterday, and he said, here's a way to learn grit or teach grit. It's just a circle, right? So you're somewhere in that circle, you say, I'm done. Can't do it anymore. Can't play the violin. I want to get out of the woods. I'm done being a colonel, whatever it is. And you've got two choices, be done or continue. Just take one step around the circle again and just do it again and get to that point again. And all you got to do is just keep staying in that circle until the job is complete, right? And not fall out. So I don't know if that makes sense or not as far as a lesson goes, but it's really that simple. When you want to quit, and I've had lots of people want to quit at races, and I say, just do me a favor, go another 10 minutes.
Yep. Did they get an A-place ribbon?
And they're back in the circle.
No A-place
no
ribbon.
A-place, right? Yeah. Just go another 10 minutes.
Yeah. I guess I'm one of these pieces and parts on this answer. Can it be taught? I think so. But then there's got to be, you can teach it to people who kind of have it already in them. And I'm not sure that everybody does, and I'm not sure that everybody wants it. So the military wants to teach grit, and they boot camp or special forces training or whatever. They believe it can be taught because we have these schools. But they also screen and pre-select.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So they do some screening and pre-selecting, and Dr. Duckworth helped a little bit with that. So you're already picking a group of guys or women who you think have the ability to be taught it, or some already have it innately.
Yeah, predisposition.
But predisposition, and then how do you bring it out in them?
Or you create a how need, right? I think a lot of times the way it's brought out is you create a need. There's a famous tracker named Tom Brown Jr., and there's a story about his winter wilderness survival group, and they're out in the snow, and all the people who are with him, they're like starting to get tired and lethargic because they're freezing and they're not doing anything. And he looks at me and says, I'm not going to do anything to help you. If you guys don't make a fire now, you're going to die, right? And so immediately went from that lethargic state to everyone's whipping together, they're making a bow drill, blah, blah, fire comes together and something like that. So I think grittiness kind of emerges when there's an imperative need, you know? And so in situations in modern day, we have to create comfort.
Yeah, so comfort. Yeah. When you were in Greenwich, for instance, you weren't too gritty. Out in the woods the last 18 months, you've gotten gritty.
I was a couple places before that.
you talk about obstacle immunity with Spartan Race. We've come back to that a couple of times. And it's really important that, you know, we go out and we put ourselves in tough situations, you know, because you can just go to the same route back and forth to work every day and have no real challenges and get bored with life. Or you can go out and actually create challenges for yourself, whether it's in an ultra race or whether it's anything. And it's creating those situations that gives you the ability to learn some grit and to develop that little maybe innate spark we all have.
And you know where else you can learn some grit? At
SpartanUpPodcast.com. We're going to do a recap.
Tandem,
right?
Nice.
We're going to have Colonel Nye's... what's it called?
Interactive.
Can I
explain that?
Yeah.
Colonel and I earlier said, of course, we'll have an interaction section, which I don't think we had planned online. So Joe, being the adaptive person that you are, has tasked Colonel and I with actually creating interactive. So when you get there and it's interactive, it's all this guy.
Well, the good news is Colonel Nye has a history over the last 32 years negotiating with countries, terrorists, et cetera, so you should be able to figure this out.
I hope we haven't negotiated with too many terrorists. I hope not.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you. Once again, another great throw by Joe at the end. Thank you.
For more information, go to SpartanUpPodcast.com, and that's where you'll see the show notes. You'll learn stuff that we didn't talk about here. I don't know what you'll do there, but it'll be fun. I'm sure.